You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
And Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny but cool Coco, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510. Our dial is WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we can also be heard on the World Wide Web.
Yes, on SitaMediaInc.com and also on 1510WWBC.com. All of our shows are posted pretty much right after the show airs. So, and then I, you know, clean them up a little bit, split them up, and make sure that everybody gets a segment, and that's when we put it on the Sita Media Inc. site. And but we are heard all over the world.
And we thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure.
Great job. And Samantha, great job keeping up the Sita Media and all the social media pages for us for Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
My pleasure.
So for our listeners who are tuning in today, first-time listeners or listeners who continue to support our show and sponsors who support our show, we sit here on Mondays and we speak about things that are going on around the nation, right here in Brevard County, Florida, in the state of Florida. And we just heat up the airwaves in a very fun, unscripted, educational manner, and we try to give out valuable information to empower people and just help folks to make great decisions, whether it's purchasing a home, buying a book, running for office, voting,
advocating.
Sometimes it's financial literacy. It's so many things that as we learn about issues in our lives that affect us and our community, we should share that information. And of course, some people don't share information, but we have Boca Grandes right here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we share everything.
That was good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Happy
Valentine's
Day. Happy Valentine's Day, right? I saw something this morning on Facebook about Valentine's becoming so commercialized, where the only people that actually benefit are the people that sells the teddy bears and the chocolates and the, you know.
And the jewelry.
Yeah.
And tomorrow's actually the best Valentine's Day because all the chocolate's 70% off.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and
I thought about
that,
it, right? And so, right. I said to Dr. Biggie, I said, so what am I getting for Valentine's? And he says, you're getting a slab of salmon, a big bag of shrimp for your party to cook for your friends, and you're going to get some flowers from the yard. It's actually quite practical.
It's beautiful.
Because I need that salmon to bake them up.
I know. You know? And it's red.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of falls right in line.
But, you know, actually Valentine's Day should be every day, right? Mm-hmm. And like I was saying to Samantha, when I was young, when I first got married to my first husband, I didn't know much about how to behave and how to live and how to enjoyed life, the basic things. But as you get older, you learn these things. You learn how to pick your battles.
And the smaller things actually mean more as
right.
you age.
How not to fight about things and try to meet people halfway and compromise. And that comes with age and wisdom, right? And so I was telling you that I read something on Facebook, and it was a friend of mine wrote that today we will spend millions and tell our loved ones, I love you. It's amazing how consumerism has lured us into believing that expensive gifts on the one day in the year can express love and caring. But really and truly, we should be doing that year round.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And it's not just about couples. It's about our friends. It's about our family. You know, you're my Valentine. You two are my Valentine's.
That's right. Valentine's. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people.
My cousin took me to lunch for Valentine's Day Saturday. So,
A lot of people are having what you call Galentine's Day, where they just invite the your girlfriends and they have a get-together for that. But and today is also a day when we should remember. Today is the anniversary for the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting, when all those people lost their lives in Parkland. And, you know, I guess all of us should learn from that and empower ourselves and educate ourselves how to get involved in our community and be there when people need us. Because a lot of those people are still experiencing PTSD, and a lot of the children are still, you know, reliving the moments.
And sadly enough, they continue to happen. What are we on, our third bomb threat in Brevard County schools last week alone?
Yeah, it's not good. But anyways, we have an action-packed show today. Our friend, Ellen, I think you remember Sumi Mukherjee. He wrote the book Minority Report.
Absolutely.
And he had quite a compelling story about what happened to him in that hotel when he tried to help others. Again, there he was helping other people. And what happened to him. And then our second segment, our friend Robin Donaldson is going to be calling in. And Robin worked very hard on, she was the mobilizing manager for Senator John Ossoff. And she also worked on Stacey Abrams' campaign. And she is a one-man powerhouse with everything she does. I don't know how she gets it done, but she empowers and gives people so much motivation to get involved in voting and their community and stay involved. And it's amazing. She's a breath of fresh air. So she'll take time off her job to call in the second segment. Yep. So Sumi, you're on the phone. So welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thanks for taking the time to call in.
Thank you. It is my pleasure to be here. And I'm glad you guys mentioned Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody, single and in a romantic relationship alike.
Yes. Well, you know, well, you heard what we were saying. We should be nice and kind and generous and show compassion year-round, every day, right? Every day we wake up is a good day.
Absolutely correct, yes. And I also like the point that as a single person right now, I definitely like the point that Valentine's is also the people in your life that you love. You know, it's not just a romantic relationship. It's also, you know, your parents, your pets, close friends, the people that make life worth living. So
yeah, that's right. And that's why Ellen said that we all have Valentine's today, which, and I appreciate that. But so Sumi, you wrote your book, it got published, and give us an update. Since the last time you called in, you're still doing your public speaking. You wrote the book Minority Report. You went through the justice system. And you've written another book since then. So talk to us. Give us an update on the life of our good friend, Sumi Mukherjee.
Life is going pretty well. The book that I'm working on, a new book right now, which is kind of still in the works, but the one that I published is called Minority Viewpoint, My Experience as a Person of Color with the American Justice System. And it has to do with myself. My parents are originally from India. And I live in the state of Minnesota, and I had an experience in northern Minnesota that, for better or worse, changed my life. And that's kind of what that story is about. And unfortunately, it did have to do with the issue of racism and its prevalence in America, and the impact that it can have on all people of color, all people of darker skin color, darker skin tone, different ethnicity maybe than the majority, and the impact that that can have. So yeah, that's what it's about.
Well you opened our eyes, because you know, a lot of immigrants, a lot of Indians, a lot of Asians, when we immigrate to the United States, we kind of sort of stay away from a lot of issues that would bring harm to ourselves and our personal selves and our families, and people stay focused on working, making money, investing, going back, going to school, becoming that, you know, the four things, the lawyer, doctor, engineer, business person, and banker, right? And so a lot of people, they say, well, they lean either on, quote unquote, the white side or the minority side. And you know how many Indians that, and I know how many Indians, they kind of bury their head in the sand, that they forget that their skin is dark. So you brought that out in the book. I mean, it's the truth. I mean, it's like, light skin versus dark skin, it's just the same racial stuff all
colorism
over again.
Across all cultures.
Across the cultures, right? So you brought that out in your book, where you were not a guy that went out looking to see if you're going to be discriminated against. It came looking for you.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, I actually went up there at the request of my ex-girlfriend's mom. Remained close with the mother of one of my ex-girlfriends, and it turned out that the mom, my ex's mother, found out that she had a form of cancer, and her granddaughter, my ex's daughter, was very devastated at learning about this. And so the older lady had requested me that, hey, you know, and I remain friends with my ex and the whole family. And she said, you know, hey, why don't you make a trip up north? And I had introduced when I had been dating my ex, I had introduced her daughter to some family friends who were boys, were a couple of boys there that were the age of my ex's daughter. And they got along so, so, so well. And they became very, very close friends. And even when they lived in different towns, they talked and stuff. And she, so the grandma said, you know, she's, you know, the Amanda, the daughter, I call her Amanda in the book, my ex's daughter is really, really bummed out at finding out that I have this form of cancer, and maybe you can, you know, bring the boys up north and, you know, have a party at the hotel pool and just, you know, take her mind off the fact that she just found out that her grandma had cancer. So I went up there truly to help my ex-girlfriend's daughter kind of, you know, pick up her mood and her spirit a little bit and bring some kids her age there and just, you know, take her mind off the fact of what she had just found out. And I had no idea that what was going to come my way was going to happen. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I was not looking for anything.
And the lady in the hotel, she laughed at you when you said that you were going to lodge a complaint. Why do you think she was so, I mean, I think she was pretty vindictive against you, and she just didn't think that they would believe you because I believe you were Indian, you were minority, you were different. Did you get that feeling from her originally?
Absolutely, yes. My ex's mother, the same one who had, you know, suggested that I make this trip, had also warned me. She said, and she's a, you know, white Caucasian person. My ex-girlfriend happened to be white Caucasian as well. And my ex's mom said, you know, Sumi, be careful when you go up there. And I said, why? And she said that, well, I think that, you know, you are a person of color, and I think that there is a higher prevalence of racism up there, and I don't want anything to happen to you when you go up there. And, you know, she's kind of like a mother figure to me, so I kind of blew it off and said, yeah, you know, I'm just going there to make Amanda feel better and to give her a good time. I'm not looking for trouble. I don't expect anything will happen. You know, you don't have to worry. But she really warned me and said there could be a lot more racism up there than what you're used to in the Minneapolis area, where there's a lot more people of color. So I kind of took it for granted, and then I went up there, and as soon as and I've worked, what really stood out to me was this woman's, this hotel worker's dislike for me upon very first glimpse of me. And that's what really stood out to me, because I've worked at many hotels myself before I was an author and a motivational speaker. I was in the hotel business. I did the exact same job as this particular individual at this Country Inn Hotel in Deerwood, Minnesota. She was an employee. And I did the same job. I worked at the front desk, and I know how you're trained and how you're supposed to talk to the customers, how you're supposed to talk to your guests. Every one of your guests is a king or a queen, and that's how they're supposed to be treated. Even if the guest behaves out of line, you as the employee are supposed to be 100%, and that's what they're paid to do. They're paid to be professionals and provide hospitality, so on and so forth. This lady disliked me and was angry at me the moment she saw me. And I don't know what else to attribute to that.
Well, I think, I think what it is too, when she saw an Indian guy with all these kids, her mind started racing, and she started forming her own opinions and getting a judgment against you without even knowing who you were. And of course, you know, all of us could understand why somebody would think that. But in your case, I don't think you posed a threat to anyone. You were there, invited, and you were trying to help the kids to have a good time. And I know you spoke to her about this. Once you told her why the kids were there, what was her reaction?
Well, she actually, what you said is a very, very good point, that's exactly precisely what happened. I was there with a whole bunch of kids who happened to be white Caucasian, and I'm not. I'm brown skinned. You know, like I said, my parents are from India. Well, she never actually asked me. I think she thought in her mind that I was a criminal and nothing I said was trustworthy. She asked the kids quietly when I had stepped aside to the restroom for a moment. She asked the kids, who is this guy? How do you know him? And they all vouched for me. They said, oh, he's like an uncle to us. you know, and he's bringing us here to use the pool. And, you know, we're just having, you know, spending this weekend time together, all of us. And she never approached me, and she could have just pulled me aside, because I've gone places with these kids before, and sometimes people have come up to me, good-natured people, adults have come up to me and said, hey, how do you know all these kids? Because they can look at me right away and they can tell I'm probably not related by blood to these kids. So they'll come up and they'll just ask me, but they all ask me personally. They come right up to me and they say, hey, how do you know these kids? And I tell them the story, and they say, oh, that's cool. You keep in touch with your ex-girlfriend and your friends, and you found some friends for her daughter, and her kids still want to keep in touch with you. You must be a good guy. And that's usually how it goes. But she didn't even ask me. She asked the kids, because she didn't trust anything that would come out of my mouth.
You know so what it is, Sumi? It's because you are such a trusting guy, and your culture is such that you care about people. You have a lot of compassion. And unfortunately, we're living in a world of such mistrust right now. And people don't even know their neighbors. They don't even know the people who live across the street. They have community parties and block parties where folks don't even come out to shake someone's hand and say, hi, how are you? I mean, God gave us a voice so that we could communicate with each other and be kind and, you know, do what we can on this earthly journey called life to make life a better place, right? But what you were exposed to is kindness, your parents, the culture. There's such a culture war going on in this country right now that good people like you, I mean, sometimes I have to say, don't even stand a chance with others, you know?
Because right away he's looked at in a suspicious manner.
It can definitely feel like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think one thing, sorry, go ahead.
So how did your Indian friends look upon this? Because, you know, in our community, they would say, well, why did you take them? You should have just stayed home and do something at home, or stay with the community, or maybe go to, you know, one of the auntie parties and uncle parties in town. Did people in your own community, were they resentful? Were they sympathetic to you? What were some of the things you were hearing from within the culture about the situation?
They were very sympathetic, yeah. And they just, I think shock and disbelief were two of the biggest things. Because this was a very special trip. I was not planning to make a trip. And it turns out, like I said, my ex's daughter lives 2 hours up north. So it's not like there was something local we could have really done with her. And the grandma said, you know, she just found out I have cancer. Maybe you can bring the boys she knows, you know, that are close family friends up there and just, you know, spend some time with her for the weekend, get her to think about something else. So it was truly out of that, you know, place that we decided to go up there. They've been very sympathetic. Some of them were kind of scared when they heard it. But very much sympathy and understanding and disbelief, I think, was the biggest thing, that they couldn't believe that I was treated the way I was treated. In this case, kind of to sum it up, and also, like you said, there is distrust in this world, especially if sometimes there's a male around a lot of young people. And I think the big thing in this story is that this employee could have handled it very appropriately. And if she had been really concerned about the kids and who I was, there were some very appropriate ways, which I describe in my book, which become very clear, of how she could have handled it. What she did was completely inappropriate and didn't do anything to ensure anybody's safety, and was just a way for her to retaliate against me and make me suffer. And so there could have been a very appropriate way she could have addressed any concerns she may have had without doing any harm to me and making sure that the kids were okay. And she didn't do any of that. This was all about being vindictive, being a bully, and I believe it was all based on my race, color, and ethnicity. And that's what I described in the story.
Hi, Sumi. This is Samantha. I have a quick question for you. What was your experience?
Yes, hi, Samantha.
Hi. What was your experience with the police officers in that community?
It was very mixed, Samantha, to be honest with you. Basically, what happened was, to make a long story short, this employee at the hotel was acting very inappropriately, very rude. Eventually, we had a verbal confrontation when I was there. And then following the verbal confrontation, I sent a lengthy complaint to the owner of the hotel about this individual's performance as an employee. And the owner wrote me back and said, oh, you know, we're going to take care of it. Nothing happened to me. Several months later, I made a return trip. About 4 months later, almost half a year later, I came back. And this employee caught knowledge that I was coming back, the employee that I complained about. At that point, 4 months later, she went to the police in the local town and reported me as a child molester.
Wow.
And so you got all these labels attached to your name, and that
when none of them are even true.
And let me tell you guys, that is the worst false label. I mean, I'd rather somebody call me a murderer or a serial killer than call me a pedophile or a child molester. That's the worst false label anybody, I think, can be subjected to. And basically what I found was some of the police, like the police that took the call and investigated it, did an excellent, excellent job. The Deerwood police chief of police for the city of small town Deerwood, Mark Taylor, did a wonderful job investigating. They didn't even feel the need to speak to me while investigating this hotel worker's bogus allegations. They did a very quick investigation, never even spoke to me, and they cleared me with no finding of any wrongdoing whatsoever.
Yeah, did the police officers ever use, like, racially motivated language or anything?
Well, unfortunately, yes, some of them did. Not the ones that investigated me immediately, but what happens with a situation like this is when somebody puts a false report like that, calling somebody, particularly a person of color, you know, associating them with being a child molester or something, that spreads around the community. And some other police officers in the same department found out, and they, apparently there was a call at one of my friend's homes, and the police were telling these friends of mine horrific things. They were saying that, oh yeah, we know him because he has an unusual name, and we recognize his name as being unusual, and we know the name from this report at this hotel with these kids, and we think he's into child sex trafficking, and we think that, you know, he's this horrible person, and he's doing all these bad things. And it was just so some of the police really, I think, reacted in a very racially charged manner. It was not the same people that initially investigated and cleared me. It was other people that I think didn't know that I had been cleared, and it was ignorance that was fueling it, obviously, whenever it
and they were, and they were talking freely.
Sounds like townies that were talking freely about a criminal case. That's
yeah.
Ridiculous.
So, Sumi...
Yes, it was absolutely out of line. Absolutely
yeah.
Out of line.
So, Sumi, we have about 4 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you really quick.
Sure.
You also had quite an experience with the legal justice system. So can you sum it up for us? I mean, you spent a lot of money. Your parents were so supportive. You have a brother,
yes.
And his path in life is a little bit different from yours. But your parents really believed in you, and they wanted to clear your name, and they looked at what was going on, and you were traumatized. This woman in the hotel caused, I think it's Vindman is her name, she caused a lot of hurt and trauma.
Lisa Vipperman, yeah.
She caused a lot of trauma for you, and your parents saw that. So tell us really quick, what happened with the attorneys and all the money you spent, and you ended up on the case? What was the outcome of the case?
Well, I was represented by a firm called Helmuth & Johnson in Edina, Minnesota, and it turns out that my father and I felt that after the case was concluded, that we received, I don't know the best way to put this, far, far less than what would have been than the level of representation that we would have aspired to receive. We felt very disillusioned by how the lawyer system works, by how the legal system works, you get the sense that some lawyers are really just out there to take your money, and they don't necessarily inform you of all the risks and all the things you needed to know before you launch a major case like this. And I learned a lot, and all of that is really described in a lot more detail in the book, but I was very disillusioned. It taught me a lot about how the legal system works, and the lawyers really primarily oftentimes are there to profit from our demise.
Things are going wrong in our life,
so we need to hire them, and if you're not careful who you hire to do the job, you can end up very much with the short end of the stick in every possible way, and that's what happened in this story. And I don't want to try to be a victim or complain about it. I use this book to teach and educate other ordinary citizens, because ordinary citizens don't plan to know this stuff. I never planned to think that, oh, I need to know how to sue somebody, because I never planned I'd have to sue anybody. I mean, nobody thinks that way. Most normal, people that are just going about their business don't try to learn that stuff because they don't need to. But so I didn't know anything. And I went into this very green, and I had no idea what I was getting into with the legal system and courts and lawyers, and how your own lawyer can possibly, mistreat you or do things that, that you see as not providing the representation that you're paying big bucks for. And I explain all of that and teach all of that in the book. So hopefully the next person that, God forbid, has to go through this will be much, much, much better prepared than I was.
And we appreciate, and we do appreciate it, because you've opened our eyes to so many things. Now, this also has the ramifications of long-term mental health impact on you, because you were bullied. It means something. You were judged. You were being labeled with names that you shouldn't have been. Have you sought any mental health treatment for yourself to help cope with this? Because this is a lot for one person.
Oh, it is a lot for one person, definitely. And I, fortunately, I haven't had to seek any mental health treatment. I think writing the book was extremely therapeutic for me. It really helped, and to be able to help other people. And I appreciate, you know, you guys saying how much it was for me, but let me make the point here. All people of color go through these things every day, in small ways, in medium ways, and in big ways. And it's not just me. I'm one of millions of dark-skinned people of color, whether it's Black, Asian, Hispanic, Native American, Somali, Middle Eastern, any group of darker people of color that you can possibly name. We go through these things, and it's wrong, and it needs to stop.
Right, and we bury it. And a lot of us just go on with our daily lives, and we kind of bury that. But you're absolutely correct. I remember once we had African-American physician who was on our hall, and he was not wearing his stethoscope around his neck. And right away, somebody handed him a mop and a broom because they thought he was the new janitor. It was just, they judged him, you know. And I know when my husband went to buy a car once, someone just bypassed him because they thought, you know, he was just looking like a bum, you know. So the thing is, people do judge, and it's wrong. And I'm so glad you brought that point up. But Sumi, so tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends where we can find your book and where people can book you as a public speaker, because you do speak very eloquently as well. You speak very well, and well, I love the way you tell the story. It's so understandable and relatable.
Well, thank you so much. Yes, there's definitely a lot to tell in my stories, and yeah, you can find them all. You can book me. You can read all about these books, my other books and everything, at my website. It's authorsumi.com. It's just A-U-T-H-O-R, the word author, and then my name, S as in Sam, U-M-I, authorsumi.com, and it's all on there.
So, Sumi, did you ever get an apology from that woman in any way, or from the hotel chain saying, look, we messed up and we're sorry? Did they ever do that?
No. Actually, on the contrary, the Country Inn Hotel in Deerwood, Minnesota, actually fully supported their employee, and they supported her against me, their own hotel customer, repeat paying customer and guest. They supported her against me in the lawsuit. They paid all of her legal bills, and my parents and I paid out of our pocket, went into our retirement. It's quite a story. It's all detailed in my book. And so, no, I never did get that apology. But I hope that this book can, rather than ruminating on the fact that I didn't get the apology, I hope this book opens the eyes of many people of color and also of the majority, and gets everybody to see that these kind of things are wrong, they're heinous, and we all as a community and a society need to say, this is outrageous and this needs to stop. It can't just be a few of us. It can't just be the people of color. It can't just be the minority that's upset about this. Everybody needs to be outraged and say, this needs to stop. This is 2022. Enough is enough. And that's what I'm hoping to achieve. Yeah.
I'm sure you've had people that came up to you and say, hey, Sumi, thank you for sharing your story, because I have a similar story and I was just afraid to come forward. I'm pretty sure, because I can see that when you speak, I know that there are people out there who are afraid to come forward. So have you had people that came up to you and said that?
I have, yeah. I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, you know, I didn't think I could do anything about it. I just figured that I'm a minority and this is, you know, it's someone else's world and I'm just living in it. And I never would have been able to fight back and stuff. I myself wouldn't have been able to fight back if I didn't have support from my parents. I mean, getting a lawyer and having, nobody wants to hire a lawyer. Nobody wants to go to court. Nobody wants to do any of these things. And sometimes, given what had happened to through this woman's false report about me at the hotel and what it had done in that community, I was simply trying to restore my professional and personal reputation and ensure my physical safety in that town. So I had to take this to court. And I think a lot of people felt that it would be easier, in a sense it would have been easier to just maybe take my lumps and walk away. But I just, I figured there was a greater purpose here, that we cannot allow this to happen.
Well, I mean, doing the right thing.
If we had taken our lumps and just turned the other way, you know, we never would have gotten rid of slavery. We never would have accomplished, you know, there never would have been women's rights accomplished.
Exactly.
So many wonderful things would not have been done if people just took their lumps and walked away. And I'm trying to encourage other people, whether you're a person of color, whether it's your sexual orientation, if you're being discriminated against, if you're being defamed, you need to try to fight back and do something. Even if you don't win, you still did something for the greater good in the big picture.
That's right. Doing the right thing is never always the easiest thing to do. That's for sure. Author Sue Me.
Absolutely.
AuthorSueMe.com. Don't forget that. And make sure that you check out Sue Me's book. Thank you so much for calling in here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We're going to take a quick break to listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low cost sandwiches and baskets to high end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We sit here every Monday. Ellen, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for a fantastic 12 years, right?
Yes, 12 years and counting.
Unbelievable. And Paul's fantastic guest.
And Paul likes us, so we'll be on a lot more years. And Samantha, thank you for being here.
I love him. I'm over a year already.
What a great day. So make sure that everybody knows that you can tune in to 1510 WWBC. You can listen to us live right here on the radio with us, or you can see any of our archive shows. Listen to our archive shows.
That's right.
On 1510wwbc.com and also on cedamediainc.com. And what a fantastic 12 years it's been, just like this morning's session with Sumi, authorsumi.com. You'll want to check out that book at amazon.com.
I'm talking about the discrimination he faced because of the color of his skin and his ethnicity. Yeah. Wrong, just wrong. So, you know, it's very interesting that we all have this incredible opportunity to use our talents, gifts, and abilities and all the capabilities we have in our mind and give back to the world. And, you know, I meet awesome people all the time on social media and through all my activism and with the Florida Democratic Party, ABWA, the Business Women's Association, whatever it is. I always get the best people, right? So my mind gravitated one day to this lovely lady, Robin Donaldson. And at that time, we were pretty like-minded, moderate Democrats who want to see the world a better place and leave a better footprint when we leave the planet. And Robin is the she was the original mobilizing manager for Senator John Ossoff. She's the founder and administrator for the team Stacey Abrams, co-founder of Paths to Peace. She's a consultant at Donaldson Associates. And what I like about her is what you see is what you get. You know how a lot of us say we're going to do this for someone who's running for office and we don't because we don't have the time or schedules, children, whatever. Robin makes the time. And she's on the phone and she's calling in our second segment. Robin, thank you so much for taking time to call in and speak about our big blue tent, our big blue Democratic Party and all you're doing to help.
Thanks, Sita, for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Well, you know, when I think about you, I think about all the things that we fight for, that sometimes a lot of us may not agree on everything, but we do agree on the core values that we were raised with, which is people shouldn't go to bed hungry. People should have an affordable place to live. We should have a clean environment. We should have health care. We should have people in leadership roles that actually care about all citizens, not just the ones who voted for them. And you always come to my mind because you give back so much to not just us, but to the state of Georgia and to every campaign that you attach your name with. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in doing so much for humanity.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, it really started with my grandparents and parents. They were, you know, both very involved in their communities and their church and just, like, you know, civic education. So that's probably where everything started. And my late father, he was the mayor of our suburb in south suburb of Chicago, Hazelcrest, Illinois. And my mom also was elected to the school board, and she still serves to this day. So I would say that's probably where everything began for me politically.
Well, you know, what I'm looking at every day on CNN, MSNBC, whatever news channel, is this idea of redistricting and how it's affecting people. So talk to us a little bit about that, and what are you seeing happening there in Georgia?
Oh, my goodness. Well, for those people maybe who are, you know, new to politics, you know, every 10 years we have the census, which gives, a snapshot of the population. It's not only about U.S. citizens, but it's about, you know, just the population of people living in a certain area. So every 10 years, a survey is taken. You know, some people respond to the survey, some don't. But it allows you to know how much resources that area needs, as well as how they draw the districts for representation, political representation, you know, at the local and state level. And so this happens, you know, every 10 years with the census. So 2020, we had the census, and so now these new districts are being drawn. But what ends up happening is, sometimes it can be either party, but especially the partisan redistricting where the districts are drawn to favor, you know, one side over the other, or to weaken representation of a certain group or not. And so the latest maps that have come out, the redistricting maps in different states, is showing that Republicans are trying to tilt the redistricting process towards them. So like here in Georgia, they redrew the district for the 6th district, which was represented by Lucy McBath, who's won the district the last two elections. Now they drew it, so now it's a Republican district, and now Lucy and another Democrat, Carolyn Bordeaux, who's the representative for the 7th, the two of them have to run against each other now in a primary for the 7th district, which was redrawn. So we lost an opportunity for a Democratic House seat here in Georgia because of these partisan drawn maps. So they are in court, you know, now. There's been several lawsuits filed in different places, in different states this is happening. So some states, the maps are being knocked down, you know, by the courts, and some are being appealed. So
I think we saw that in Alabama, right? I think we saw in Alabama it was knocked out.
Yes, yes. So we have to just keep an eye on what's happening there, as well as, you know, continuing to put pressure on Congress to make sure that they can pass voting rights. Even though it didn't, the debate, you know, the vote for the debate didn't happen, I mean, we still can't just give up, because it really is something that it's not just about Democrats or Republicans. It's about all Americans, and it's about expanding that voting access so all eligible Americans can make sure that they can make sure their votes counted and they're protected against any kind of suppression or election sabotage.
Yeah, and you know what's sad is we hear so many politicians speak about freedom and about truth. But the truth is, a lot of them don't really stand for freedom and truth at all. Because if they did, they wouldn't be trying to take away the one thing that we all can treasure, which is the right to vote.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, it's, you know, we're a growing, you know, country. A lot of young people are coming into their political power. And, you know, it's really sad that we still have to deal with issues around voter suppression and making sure that we have fair representation and not having any kind of voting discrimination.
Right. And when we talk about fair representation, I mean, all of us are watching what's going on right here in Florida, in Tallahassee, with all these horrific bills that are coming out about people's, against people's gender, against the teachers. We're all watching it. And I feel really sad that there's so many people who are not involved and engaged in politics on year-round so that they could see what's happening, because you're pretty involved and engaged, and I think you and I breathe and sleep and enjoy it. I enjoy politics. I think life is politics from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to bed. Everything we do centers around that. So do you guys have any kind of bills like that coming out in Georgia as far as... you know, now they want to have the Don't Say Gay bill here.
The Don't Offend White People bill here.
And the teachers and what they're doing to the teachers. Do you see anything like that in Georgia right now?
Oh, yes. Yes. There's, you know, the similar issues that, you know, Florida's dealing with here in Georgia. There's all kind of bills that are trying to limit classroom discussions on race, which is just doesn't make any sense. You know, young people are... You know, we're living in different times, so they're exposed to all kind of issues, you know, things that are happening. And if we can't discuss things like racism, that are things that happen, you know, every day, you know, in this country, and have, you know, reasonable discussions and debates, you're really not equipping young people to go out into the world. And really, they're already dealing with a lot of these issues in the first place. But yes, there's multiple bills that have been proposed by Republican lawmakers to control these discussions. And there's a lot of students and parents and teachers that have been pushing back about this because a lot of people are scared about censorship in education, and they're also concerned about just suppressing different perspectives and, you know, experiences. And, you know, a lot of this is going to also affect teachers coming back to teach, you know, because a lot of teachers are having their own issues teaching due to the pandemic. And a lot of them are, most teachers are parents, and so they're you know, just trying to deal with their own household and things that are happening. And this education system is becoming more and more burden and stress, you know, even than more than it was before. So you might get some teachers who are afraid to come back to teach out of fear, you know, that they're going to be, you know, criminalized or something.
Oh, they're
going to
be watched on a camera. I mean, now they're talking about putting cameras into school. So if a kid is crying and upset and the teacher comforts a kid, is a parent at home watching that going to say, oh, they're touching the kid? I mean, it's like, I feel like we're going backwards with women's rights, with public education, with so many things. And it, I can't stress enough that people need to get off their couches and get involved in their communities and start asking questions and in a respectable manner and reaching out to each other and starting and start talking.
And it's sad because I think Robin would agree with me on this. This generation is a lot more open to things that previous generations, people holding seats of power right now, weren't open to. So it's like you're trying to close their minds to the way that they want to think, and that's not fair. So Robin, on that note, how do you feel should we be making it easier to vote or harder to vote?
Oh my gosh, it has to be easier. I mean, it shouldn't, that's the whole thing. It's like a lot of times, you know, people, if you've never lived in another state, or, you know, or if you've always lived in, you know, states that have embraced voting rights, it's very different state to state. And it shouldn't be like that, especially for our federal elections. I mean, if we're all voting, you know, for president or for, you know, representation in Congress, why, you know, in one state, you know, a person has to, you know, wait in a 10-hour line, which is something that happens in Georgia. And it's not, you know, an isolated occurrence, you know, versus, you know, another state where someone, you know, my mom lives in Illinois and she doesn't have to show her ID when she goes to the polls, you know. So it's just, the point is like we have these different rules, you know, for different states. And, you know, sometimes people will point to, you know, states' rights and states should be able to. But when we have these federal elections, everyone who's eligible to vote should have, you know, equal access and to make sure that their vote can be cast and counted and that, you know, they're not being discriminated against. So that's why, you know, we really need to continue to put that pressure on Congress, you know, whether it's this year, next year, whenever, they need to pass comprehensive federal voting rights.
That's correct. And, you know, the truth is not always warm and fuzzy, right? And we're watching, some people are saying that we're losing our democracy, but we better start paying attention. Do you feel, Robin, as though we're heading towards an autocracy instead of a democracy? I mean, are we sliding into a place that is dark and just dismal? Because I speak to people from both sides, from, you know, the left and the right, and some people feel like the extreme left and the extreme right are so angry, they're so divided that they're taking us to a path that we have to be really careful.
Yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, there's already, you know, some divisions, you know, in America. And then, you know, there's a lot of, you know, communities and different people who maybe, you know, have different points of view, but we can all still live together, you know. But it's the people who are really, you know, really being drawn to extremism and, you know, causing violence or inciting violence. That is becoming, you know, more mainstream, you know, than it was before. Also the fact that we have, you know, foreign nationals who are also donating to our campaigns, and we have, you know, that influence, we don't really know. And, you know, due to Citizens United and the fundraising laws, they don't have to disclose, you know, who is contributing, you know, to a lot of these campaigns and just to these different companies and everything. So yeah, I mean, we're definitely, you know, in some uncharted territory here. And that's why it's just even more important that, you know, Americans have to have control over our ability to vote, because that is what's keeping us a democracy and makes, you know, makes us, you know, different from other places in the world. So it's, I think it's definitely a concern. And I think people should pay attention to, you know, the lies that are being told, you know, about the insurrection and everything else, because there are, you know, bad actors, some in the United States, some outside, who don't have our best interests in mind and want to see us more divided and less of a democracy.
Well, we're watching the breakdown of so many areas and a lot of dysfunction. But what do you think is going to take collectively for us to heal. Because at the end of the day, America is still beautiful. It's still a great place. But there are those bad apples on the left and the right, extreme on both sides sometimes. And what will it take for us to say, cool it, let's get back in the middle and learn to talk to each other, communicate effectively, and listen. And if someone is elected into office, they're not elected into office only to care about the ones that voted for them. It's about all the citizens, like President Joe Biden is doing. It's about America. It's about all of us. What do you think it's going to take collectively for us to heal, Robin?
I think if people would just maybe just be open to just learning and understanding how our democracy works, you know, understanding about who your local elected officials are, you know, how elections work, you know, be a poll worker, you know, consider getting more involved in some aspect of your community, you know, even just getting curious about running for office, you know, what that takes, or, you know, joining a school board or whatever the case may be. I just think if people were paying a little bit more attention about, you know, the process and how they can just even get involved, you know, at the local level or just going to meet someone at the local level, it makes people feel more invested, I feel like, in their communities. And then, you know, taking that to the state level, the federal level, just trying to educate yourself about how our, you know, country works and civics and how voting works.
So get educated, right? So get an
absolutely.
And the thing is, because of you, Robin Donaldson, I have to say, because of you, I donated to Senator John Ossoff. I donated to Reverend Warnock. I donated to Stacey Abrams because I believe in you. And when I saw you working so hard on the campaigns and I couldn't get the time off and then COVID came, you inspire a lot of us on through your Facebook messaging, through your podcast, through your live feeds. You're the person that everyone should have in their community. Everyone should get to know you and watch how you operate because it's beautiful. And I know Samantha is dying to ask you something else. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
Robin, how important do you think it is to do away with this antiquated electoral college and versus the actual popular vote for a true democracy?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, it's very important. I mean, a lot of these, you know, laws and why they did things the way they did, it just does not add up with what's happening now, you know, in mm-hmm. the countries that we're living in. And then you have to look at, you know, sometimes what was the intention behind, you know, some of those rules and things that are put into place, you know, like even like the filibuster. And when you look back and really look at the history, you know, a lot of times it's going to point back to some sort of marginalization or, you know, trying to be discriminatory against, you know, another group, you know, and it can often be black voters or women or, you know, people who live in a more urban setting or people who did or didn't own land, you know, so we have to look at some of these things and just like the Electoral College, I mean, it doesn't make sense that, you know, it's a state who has, you know, less people in the state than, you know, a whole city can have such an outweighed influence on who is or isn't going to be president. So absolutely we need to look at and reshape the Electoral College.
Yeah, and you know, what we see sadly is so many people are indoctrinated into thinking that some people deserve to be poor. And those of us who are trying to help them were just pushing socialism. I mean, I remember saying to my Democratic friends that the Democrats need to learn how to message properly. Because when that word defund and socialism rose up and people started taking it on the right and running with it, I said, wait a minute, we're not asking you to defund the police. We're asking you to pour more resources into communities, build those communities up, treat all the zip codes the same, and we're not, you know, sending socialism your way. We're not promoting socialism. We're talking about Medicaid. We're talking about affordable housing. We're talking about public education. We're talking about taking care of people. So how do you think we can help message our party's platforms better, Robin?
Yes, I think definitely just, you know, first, because I always like to just kind of look at, like, okay, what can I do, you know, personally, because, you know, it's hard to get everybody to do something or be on the same page. But if you can just, you know, look for yourself and educate and research. And when I say research and, you know, look at, you know, valid, verified sources, you know, not just a random person on social media who's not, you know, backing up what they're saying, or they're not an expert on the subject, but really learning the issues for yourself so you can talk about them in your words. I think that is a huge help, because, you know, word of mouth and talking to your own circles goes a long way. And then I would also say that, you know, keeping the language and the message simplified, because there are, you know, the Democratic Party is a big tent. There's a lot of different perspectives and things of that nature. But, you know, here in Georgia, you know, when we had the runoff, it was just, it came down to health care, jobs, and justice. And everybody knew and kind of understand what that meant, you know, for that time. So I think, you know, that's one thing. And then looking at some of the things that the Democrats and the president has done that, like, a lot of people just aren't, you know, connecting, but like the child tax credit, you know, the infrastructure bill. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful things that are going to benefit all kinds of people, all communities across this country, like removing the lead pipes. So there's a lot of great things in the legislation that's already been, you know, put through. And I think if you just find out about it for yourself and are able to just have a clear message to other people, that goes a long way.
Right. And in Virginia, we all saw that Terry McAuliffe lost that state because the suburban moms, the moms, they went for one thing, and that was education. People want you to listen to them when it comes to their child's education. And I think we would be doing ourselves a favor if we say to those moms, I hear you, I understand. Because it seems as though that was the one thing that they ran on and he won, was education in the public schools. So do you have an opinion on that one way or the other? Because all the other states, people need to start paying attention, because what one person might think is so important and it's a issue like city environment, another person might say, wait a minute, I want a clean environment and I want an affordable wage and I want a safe place to live. But my number one issue right now is what's going on in the public schools. What do you think about that?
Yes, and I mean, it's, you know, a lot of times the people who are, and this goes, you know, doesn't matter which side or political, but, you know, a lot of times the people who make the most noise, you know, people give them the attention. So if you're not for these bills, it's really important to either show up to a meeting, and a lot of times these meetings are on Zoom now, and just showing up and leaving a comment, letting people know, you know, if you're not for a lot of these crazy bills in education that are coming down, and just let your voice be heard to have some kind of opposition to a lot of these people who are supporting these, you know, really strict and crazy education bills. I mean, and a lot of these are just to stoke division and, you know, just creating problems and emergencies, you know, that were not, like, for instance, you know, CRT and all this other stuff. This was not an issue, you know, in 2020. This is something that has been come up with in order to stoke, you know, division.
And fear.
And fear. And, you know, and that's not going to help any child's education. There's also a move really to defund public school education by cutting billions of dollars.
So I hate to cut us short, but it's amazing how fast these segments go. And here we are in Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you so much for calling
have Robin
in.
Again.
And we've got to have you back on again, Robin. Thank you so much for all your help.
Thank you.
And certainly, Sita, thank you so much for all the great guests you get here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends each and every week. Tune in at 1510 WWBC each and every Monday at 1 p.m. all over the world.